Welcome back to the Mind of Monty podcast with your co-hosts, Monty G and I, Mo. Today, we've got a marvelous show planned to share with you all.
Okay. You chose a good one.
I did choose a good one. I told you I was going to get another word. I was going to stop saying spectacular or whatever, but we got a marvelous show. It's a wonderful
marvelous day. Mark Merrill. That's what it made me think of.
And you ruined it.
How you doing? Motivate. I wonder if he's still doing motivational
speech. Yeah, he still motivationally speaks.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right.
So we're gonna talk about some interesting headlines. We're gonna recap Wrestle Kingdom and New Year's Dash. Some people were right, some people were wrong. We both were wrong sometimes, but you know, that is the name of the game when it comes to predicting any type of wrestling event.
Yeah, and to be honest, when it comes to Wrestle Kingdom, I don't really care. I participate in predictions because that's what you do for these shows. But I honestly just enjoy the show. It's a 4 to 5 hour event for the most part. Usually, it's like for you to get mad because you didn't get something right anytime. It's tough. But like when it's a great show, sometimes when you get it wrong, you're like, damn, this was fun. So you know that's what more of what happened in this one. It was more like, I'm wrong, but I like that I was wrong because it turned out to be a good way for things to go. Mm. So, yeah, we'll get into that. But first and foremost, we have to get this out of the way. I wanted to talk about it because I'm not going to pretend to know anything about what's going on when it comes to this. But I just thought I definitely covered when he left. I covered when he announced I'm not going to say full retirement. As long as he's not on television or booking, I guess he's still technically retired. All this boardroom stuff. You know, I've seen people acting like he pulled the Mark Henry on this, but it's like, not until he shows back up and he has creative control and stuff again. Then it's like, yeah, he's back. But if you don't know what I'm talking about by now, I'm pretty sure it's been a few days. You've heard the news. Yes, Mr. McMahon is back, or Vince McMahon is back, to assume his role of executive chairman of the board. So boo.
We need an anti-pop. Boo.
Yeah. I'm going to read their quote and just explain what they say or what the press release said when it comes to Mr. McMahon's return. So Mr. McMahon's new role will enable unified decision making through the company's upcoming media rights negotiations, which is not a surprise that this is when he timed this. Mm-hmm. You know, when the media rights are coming up. So, of course, it's perfect time for him to try to get back into the fold. A parallel full review of the company's strategic alternatives. Now, that's the thing that kind of got me when I first read this. It was like, strategic alternatives, huh? You know, it sounds like, it just sounds like jargon, right? But when you think about it, it's like, what could you mean by that? What suggestion would Mr. McMahon have strategically?
Alternatively.
Yeah, what is the alternative to what? Anyway, which Mr. McMahon believes is the right course of action. Of course he believes it is. And in the best interest of WWE and the WWE shareholders.
Let's be honest. He lost a lot of money over the last 6 months.
I'm sure he, yeah.
And sure. You sure. Better to sell while we high and everybody's still in the stock market.
And at the end of the day, he wants a piece of the sale.
Yes, he wants as much of the sale.
He was not going to let them sell this company without him in the boardroom.
Of course. No,
so,
no, no.
Yeah, that's basically the meat of this. But to continue, so after the shareholders, amidst the current dynamics in media and entertainment, Mr. McMahon has communicated to the board he believes there is a narrow window right now of opportunity to create significant value for everyone involved, basically. And to do so, the strategic alternatives review must occur in tandem with the media rights negotiation. So again, like I said,
the timing
of this is not surprise. You know, again, it makes sense when you think about when he's deciding to do this. He also expressed to the board that he believes two initiatives require Mr. McMahon's direct participation, leadership, and support as controlling shareholders. So that's pretty much the statement that was put out. And, of course, you know, we all know what happened with the Wall Street Journal and the multiple stores that pretty much got Vince in this situation. But You know, it was rumors. I think we talked about it here about Vince secretly telling his circle that he was going to make this move. No surprise that a few months later.
He'd been trying to prepare everybody for months. He was like, look, I think it's time we step back in.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, no.
Trust me. Like you said, everything's died down. It's time to strike. You know, and of course, after this statement, the stock went up. So Vince may have been proven right as a businessman that maybe now is the time to see what's going on.
Sure. I've got a
opinion. But it only went up because
people are planning on selling.
That we're going to sell. So, yeah. I'm giving him credit but probably too much. Like, yeah. It probably was going to go up either way if WWE announced that they're
going to sell it with or without Vince.
Yeah.
Well, we'll just see how this affects the long-term plans we talked about. I know you and I talked about off mic some of the different buyers that are invested. We got a Saudi buyer in there.
Yeah, Disney.
We've got a lot of major players in the
maybe
game.
Maybe even NBC. Got Peacock, so maybe they would try to work out something to, do it that way. According to Sean Ross Sapp, this is what he tweeted, it certainly makes sense why so many names within WWE, especially the higher-ups, were keen on telling, him last month how much they didn't want Vince back around. So word had probably already got around with other, shareholders and people within the company that Vince was going to be doing this. And not only did three board members get removed so Vince can return, but he brought two people with him who were co-presidents in the past. So basically people who he has worked with, I don't want to call them yes men and women, but they may be. It kind of looks that way though Vince fired them in the past, so maybe they don't have an allegiance to him.
I don't know.
It's hard for me to believe that, with the timing.
With him bringing them back, it feels as though, like, I don't know how many people on the board, but it feels like he needs some guaranteed votes in this.
Some backup. Exactly. He needs some backup. And I think Meltzer has given all types of opinions of how this could go. It could be a mess. It could actually lead to a sale. It could end up being a big mess of a lawsuit because of legal, all types of legal jargon that I'm not qualified to talk about. So that's kind of where I want to leave it. Like, it's happening. We don't, as fans, we have not really much of a clue at all. If it is a fan out there with business degrees or know anything about this type of thing, I'm pretty sure that they would be, I'm telling you right now, if you don't have a podcast business guy who listen to this or whatever, or YouTube, go on ahead and make that video. I'm trying to tell you.
Or a series.
Because there's a lot of fans out here like me that just have no clue what could happen from this. It's probably, as a matter of fact, might not even have to be a fan. It might be just like a lawyer or like a business YouTuber who just heard this. Because, like, I know they exist because it's almost a YouTuber for everything now.
Yep.
So, anyway, either way it goes, like I said, I'm going to leave that where it's at. When fans heard that Vince could be coming back, you should have saw the socials. Everyone, worst case scenario, it's all over. And in the meantime, some of the memes were awesome. I will give credit to that. But, we just all have to wait and see how this all play out. I know some of those new signees and some of these other people, when they see this, or even some of these people in the company, it might be some people in the company. Like I said, Sean Ross Sapp was reporting there's plenty of people who were working within WWE who did not want Vince to have anything to do with anything again.
Yeah.
So we'll just have to wait it out, see how all this plays out. Will it end up as a sale? Will WWE end up on Disney Plus?
Oh, that'd be weird to think about the whole catalog. I mean, they are R-rated now.
But they're going to have TV rights. They're going to have to figure out. They have all types of things that we're going to find out about, I guess, in the same way we found this out.
Yep.
Eventually a press release or something. Yeah, when everything is all done. But we'll come back to this when we know more. And, but again, I'm not going to try to talk about something I have no clue about.
Exactly. On to better news, more news that we're more qualified to talk about here on this great wrestling podcast. We're going to talk about the Wrestle Kingdom 17 results on January the 4th. So I don't know if you remember our back and forth on that specific day last week, but We kind of decided that the opening match of the night, the Young Lion Showdown, would end in a draw, and it did end in a draw.
Yeah, like I said, I think I eventually just went on and went with Oleg because I thought him debuting at Wrestle Kingdom was again something special, and I still think that even though it ended up kind of being an exhibition instead of actually being a competitive match, so you know it was only like 3 minutes. It didn't go long, so. If it would have went longer, who knows what would have happened. Maybe it still would have been a draw. But I know the Young Lions in these situations either draw or, like I said, you have one of them maybe go over. But draws are not uncommon in this situation. And I thought Oleg really flashed some potential. So I think I saw a little bit of why he was in that position at the beginning of Wrestle Kingdom.
Second opening match was the KOPW 2023 New Japan Rambo, the over-the-top battle royal style thing where the final four then move on to the next show to compete for the KOPW, now title, former championship. But final four ended up being Sho, the Great Okan, Shingo, who lied about being there, and Toru Yano. Yano is a staple here. He's always in the final four somehow.
Yeah, Yano just survived. He does the same thing pretty much in these battle royals. Find a way to not get eliminated. You know, again, you had the greatest KOPW champion. You had possibly the latest but greatest because of his actual match output as KOPW champion with Shingo. Then you have Okan, who's the British heavyweight champion, but at the same time, you know, has tried to capture the KOPW in the past. And was pretty close to dominate, as you saw. He walked out of this match at Wrestle Kingdom with the belt, even though he was not the champion yet. But so we know what Oka can do, and somehow that bastard Sho, of course, actually after accidentally eliminating his own partner in the ELP, Sho got that last spot, even though he was the first entry. So I guess that's impressive. But yeah, KOPW Battle Royale this year was a lot of fun. It was awesome way for everyone to kind of get time in the dome, get, you know, the people who didn't have any active feuds or, you know, title matches. It was great. It was a great job of getting them on screen, giving them moments to shine. And I think it opened some eyes and made, you know, it's a little bit of what made New Japan so fun. It can be confusing because it's completely different from what everyone is used to when they see a Royal Rumble style match or a Battle Royal, but I really still liked it. So, yeah, this was fun.
Next up, we had the Antonio Inoki Memorial six-man tag match with Team Nagata, Kojima, and Makabe taking the victory, Makabe pinning Tiger Mask.
Yeah, and seeing the old guys work, even especially with the way they finished, because they tried to go for, looked like something a little too fancy maybe for Tiger Mask at this point. But it wasn't bad, though. It was funny. They worked hard, and I love watching, everyone in this match is over 50. So, again, to just sit back and marvel at just how good everyone in this match still manages to look and how competitive they still are. You know, like I said, Kojima was the GAC heavyweight champion in NOAH, so just until September. So, you know, again, he's awesome. Tiger Mask was just in Super Junior Tag League. We know what Suzuki is all about. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's just when you get a chance to see those guys who still kind of active, even though it may be towards the end of their journey, and then you have guys like Nagata. You have people like Nagata who spends most of his time training the Young Lions at this point, but still, again, possibly at the end of his journey, but always come back, always is used in that spot of kind of giving a great fight. So, you know, you can't really even see a lot of the age, even on the 69-year-old Tetsumi Fujinami, he was in there doing dragon screws and getting into his stuff. So, again, it's just awesome to see 69-year-old man going, you know, doing what he still does. And then in memory of Antonio Inoki, you know, Fujinami may not be able to do that as often, but whenever it is a chance to see Fujinami in a New Japan ring, and then, like I said, at Wrestle Kingdom, in memory of Inoki, I think it's a huge honor, and I just love the fact that a lot of new fans may have got a chance to see some of these names that you may have heard in the past, or maybe you never heard of these people, and you've just been introduced to six legends of New Japan history. And now, now if you're on New Japan World, after being a new subscriber, what guess what you can do? You can go look up, watch Fujinami versus Flair back in the day. Watch Nagata in his prime. You know what I mean? So, awesome. Like I said, awesome for the moment, even if it wasn't like a classic match.
I agree. Next up, we've got the first match of the actual card. We've got the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship match with Catch Nene picking up the victory against Lio. Lio Rush suffered a nasty injury to his face on a spot on the ramp. And he still stuck it in there. As much as I have things to say about him, I'll give him props for that. For sticking
like everyone there. Has something to say about Lio for some reason, and I don't get it. Lio's awesome, and
I just don't like his voice.
This match right here was a hell of a way to kick off the show, and you know, be that as it may, Lio, like you said, fought through the pain, fought through everything, but this match started off with a great pace. It was an all-around just great title match to me. It kept me guessing. I had no clue, really, honestly, who was going to take it. And that was after I had kind of already because I watched this. I had to come back to catch this match. So I had already kind of had a feeling that Team Lio did not win. But it didn't matter to me. I was just that invested into it, and the crowd was getting more into it as the match went on. And, you know, we all were along for that ride. But I thought, you know, this did a great job of showing or, like, kind of recapping Junior Tag League in one match, if you see what I'm trying to say, even though it wasn't as long. As a matter of fact, they could have went 10 more minutes, and I think all of us would have been fine with that. That's just how good it was. Catch 22, I have to say it again, best Super Junior Tag team, probably best Super Junior Tag champs since the Young Bucks were down in that division, so... I love Catch 22, Catch Nene. Shout out to TJP and Akira doing their thing. But yeah, Team Lio had a great tournament. They just could not, finish it here. But it was great effort from everyone.
Second match of the night was the IWGP Women's Championship match, Time Nakano versus Kairi. Kairi picking up the victory with an insane elbow.
Yeah, I love the story that Chris Charlton and, you know, I think even Kevin Kelly kind of went into it with Time Nakano and kind of introducing all of us, if you're not into Stardom or regularly watching Stardom. I know a lot of people may have gotten introduced to her in this setting. And, I was really impressed with what I got a chance to see. And it was only like 5 to 6 minutes. So I know she can even, you know, probably kick it up to even a higher gear. But the fact that she looked up to Kairi, and Kairi left for WWE when she kind of was coming into Stardom, and you know, kind of always wanted to follow in Kairi's footsteps. So when Kairi comes back, you know, to be in this spot on a New Japan card, like I mentioned, I agree with the net. This should have went much longer. I know it's a packed card, but I really wish they would at least made time for 10, 15 minutes maybe for them. But I was still grateful because, again, I've been able to watch the progression over the last 4 to 5 years of when Stardom would be in the Dome but not televised, or when Stardom would be in the Dome but only on the pre-show. And now to see them second match of the card in a new IWGP Women's Championship match, and then what happened after this added another 10 to 15 minutes to the segment, I actually ended up really happy because, again, the 5-6 minute match wasn't like a squash. It was intense. The people were really into it, even though, again, like I said, it went by really, really fast. And I thought it actually played into Stardom's hands kind of well because it actually served as a great teaser into what Stardom is all about. And I think if you looked at that match, you could look at that match, although it's short, and say, wow, I want to see more like this, mm-hmm. or more of this. You know what I'm saying? So then you go to Stardom and you just fall into that universe. So, again, I think a lot of new fans, new faces got a chance to see what Stardom is all about. So I love that. So I thought this was great for Stardom. I thought this was great for New Japan. And, we can kind of go ahead and get into what happened after this because I think that's great for the women's division overall.
Oh, yeah. Mercedes Moné debuted, made her official. Made her official challenge.
Yes, that button still works.
For the title at, what was the name? The February event. What is the name of it?
Battle in the Valley or something like that. It's in San Jose, though. Or something okay. like that.
Battle in the Valley.
I want to say February 18th or around that date. I could be completely wrong.
I can
wrong,
find out.
But it's in February. Yeah, check the schedule. But yeah, it's in February. I think it's definitely in San Jose, Battle in the Valley. I think it's the call. It's what they're calling
Battle
it. It's
in the
only
Valley.
Match on February the card 18th. So far. Yeah, the 18th. So I was right. It's the only match on the card so far. It's going to be on Fight TV. So they're definitely going to be using. I love that. Immediately, Mercedes is the one. And it just shows you how much they, how confident they are. Apparently, it's already almost sold out.
Oh, dang.
You know, I saw Mercedes talking about it on social media, how it's almost already running out of seats. And so far, the only match they have on that card is Kyrie and Mercedes. So if some people are going to look at that spot and say, oh, man, which they messed up the finish because, you know, Mercedes couldn't hit her finisher as smooth as she wanted to because of whatever, you know, those things happen. But, you know, everyone is as much as a lot of people were happy for Mercedes, as much as a lot of people were great, you know, were great about the moment itself. It was a lot of people who had things to say, and I just think that is the proof right there. Not only are the stats I give at the end of this card proof, but the stats that they're about to sell out San Jose, and the only match they've announced right now is Kyrie and Mercedes. So again. And, you know, in a company where, like I said, just last year I was having to tell newcomers or trying to explain to newcomers why there aren't any women on the card. And now the very next year we have
women on the card.
Possibly one prominent. Of the greatest women's wrestlers of all time. Right. And, you know, against another one of the greatest women's wrestlers of all time or just wrestlers of all time in general. Because, you know, what's the point of saying women's wrestlers? Wrestlers of all time, two of the greatest wrestlers of all time, doing what they do in a New Japan ring.
And I think this proves what we kind of talked about a couple podcasts ago where we
peaked WWE, as a star.
Yeah, they were like, she peaked as a star when she and Kyrie are selling out a whole pay-per-view by themselves. Yeah. You can't say somebody peaked as a star or they don't draw if they're drawn to this capacity. Like, you were obviously wrong. Whoever said it was obviously wrong.
Exactly. And that's why I don't believe WWE even said it. That's why I said I wasn't even putting that on WWE. Whatever reporter who got his clicks or whatever who phrased it like that, because it's just hard for me. It's still hard for me to think that. And this is why. Exactly. So we can move on. But awesome moment. Mercedes looked great. And shout out to everyone who watched my YouTube video about it. As you can tell, the night after, literally after this show, that morning, I had to record something. That's how great this moment was for New Japan and for Mercedes.
I agree. Third match of the night was the IWGP Tag Team Championship match. It was Bishamon versus FTR, with FTR failing to retain their titles. And Bishamon picking up the victory for the second time. Second time they were the Tag League winners, and the second time they've gone on to win the title after winning Tag League.
Also, the 10th time in a row the tag titles have changed hands at Wrestle Kingdom. So, yeah. Remember that next time, I guess.
Yeah.
Those titles usually always move.
Wrestle Kingdom's a little busy for them, you know?
Fantastic tag match, though. Like you said, FTR... worst losing streak ever right now. They lost to the... I should have known something was wrong when they lost to the Gun Club. Losing to the Gun Club? Seriously? FTR? Losing to the Gun Club?
Yeah.
And then, like I said, they lost all three of their championships, I think, in the last, like, 3 weeks or so.
Yep. Triple A.
So, it's been a rough patch, but they were the best team in New Japan consistently for a while here. And, you know, it was a great moment here, like I said, for Yoshihashi in particular, because I know how far he's came. But, you know, Goto was also here, and both of them together have been one of the best teams in New Japan, like I said, consistently for a while. If not just for this year, they've definitely been the best, and World Tag League proves it the last 2 years. So, you know, the chemistry together is only getting better. And then overcoming FTR, who, you know, like we said, awesome as always, and they were great here, you know, in Japan, and the fans were definitely into it. Really makes me wish FTR could have been able to come to Japan more often during their run. But either way it go, I'm grateful that they were here in this spot. And like I said, they gave Bishamon a great tag match. And I thought it was very, very fun and awesome that Yoshihashi got the pin. And again, like I said, Yoshihashi, one of the most improved people. You don't go into a match with Yoshihashi, whether it's one-on-one or two-on-two, whatever the situation, you don't go into a match knowing that you have Yoshihashi defeated anymore. Yoshihashi is the one doing the ass kicking now, and I love it.
I agree. Like he's definitely made a change for the better. I think I'm blaming Goto. Goto brought it out of him.
Yeah, like he was already improving, but yeah, since he started the team up with Goto, he just ramped it up.
Fourth match of the night, the New Japan Pro Wrestling World TV Championship Tournament Final. Rin Narita versus Zack Sabre Jr., with Zack Sabre Jr. picking up the victory with an arm lock cross hold.
Yes, it was out of nowhere, too. It was a great grappling match here, great technical wrestling. Of course, I mean, and that's what you expect from Zack Sabre Jr. One of my most anticipated matches here, to be honest, man, you know, because I just love both of these guys. I may have predicted Rin Narita, but I told you guys that was out of loyalty. I had no idea who was going to win this match. So I was expecting a fast-paced brawl or, you know, a fight, but technical. So, and that's what we got. We got a great strong style match. I love that Zach is saying that this belt is going to represent strong style. So I think I mentioned this before, Zach is perfect for this belt. This time limit, the strong style format, the fact that if you're just watching a regular Zack Sabre Jr. match, him pulling off a submission out of nowhere is just pretty much his style. So I think that fits this 15-minute time limit perfectly. Mm-hmm. And him being a New Japan World Champion makes sense. And even though I thought Rin Narita would have been a great choice, right now I am patient. I'm perfectly patient, and I get it. I was a little too, you know, I was ahead of myself, and that's fine. And Zach joining TMDK after this, awesome move. He has a relationship with Mikey and Shane, obviously. You can hear it in their backstage comments, just how well they get along. Exactly. They are very, very entertaining together, so I can't wait to see what happens with Zach at the front.
I agree. And possibly some new things on the horizon for Rin, with him teaming up with Despy and Suzuki, possibly going after those six-man Never Openweight titles.
Yeah, and I was going to get more into that on New Year's Dash, but yes, 100%. That's what it looked like. So we'll see, though. Nothing's been confirmed.
He might just be testing them out. The fifth match is the Never Openweight Championship match. We've got Tama Tonga versus Carl Anderson, with Tama picking up the victory with a gun stun.
Yeah, a nice Oz cutter like gun stun before the last one. But Anderson brought his A game. I always want to give, like I said, I like Carl Anderson, particularly in Japan. You know, that's where I kind of got introduced to Carl Anderson. So the Carl Anderson that everyone sees on WWE television and all that, not to say that it's just like everything else when they go to WWE. It's different.
Or AEW.
Or watered down. It's like people were talking about how great, and I didn't give a shout to this, and I need to. Shout out to Shinsuke Nakamura. Shout out to the Great Muta. Two guys who made me fall in love with Japanese pro wrestling at different times. Like I said, growing up, it was Muta with The Mist. I mean, you're a child. It was nothing like that when you first experienced a great Muta match. And then, like I said, as I was getting older and I knew more about wrestling, watching Shinsuke Nakamura in Japan. And like I said, I think a lot of people, not a new face, has got a chance to see just what the hell I've been talking about how great Shinsuke is. He's a whole nother person in Japan. It's just simple as that. It's kind of like what somebody else we'll talk about in a minute, who just seems like they're a whole entirely different person when in Japan. But anyway, I just wanted to give a shout out to them for that. And the reason why I bring that up is because, like I said, Carl Anderson is another person who maybe in WWE seems a little watered down by comparison to this. Same thing with Shinsuke Nakamura. In the entrance, how big he feels, the type of star he is. Yeah, WWE does that, but it's kind of watered down by comparison to how it is in Japan. But anyway, like I said, you could tell who was the bad guy in this match. The fans really were behind Tama, and it's just so awesome because, again, we know who Tama is. Tama's a career bad guy. He really was. And so to see him this loved It's amazing. It's bizarre, still kind of, but amazing nonetheless. He's improved, and I think this reign as open weight champion will be great. I hope this leads to a lengthy or at least a couple of defenses where we get to see Tama as a singles champion in this spot. Hell, I was even booking something. I was fantasy booking in my head if this reign go long enough that if T ever wants to come back, he comes back and he fights his brother. They don't have to stay beefing, but, you know, just maybe one of those.
Cordial.
Just
cordial.
One time. Yeah, maybe just a challenge. It's like, you've been doing your thing by yourself. Let me prove you what I can do alone, brother. So, you know, right. Something like that. I wouldn't mind that, but, you know, we'll see how that turns out. I wish nothing but the best to Tama because, you know, we love Tama around here.
Oh, yeah. Sixth match of the night, we had Keiji Muto's last match in New Japan. Shota Umino, well, Team Muto, Tanahashi and Umino picked up the victory against Team LIJ. Shota pulled out a Death Rider on Bushi for the win.
Yeah, and they kind of set him up perfectly because I think before that, Muta hit his Shining Wizard. So it was kind of like everyone jump on Bushi. I told you guys in the prediction.
You did.
That Bushi was in trouble. And that's pretty much how it played out. Even though this was fun, I just have to point it out. They started off the match with Sonata being in the ring with Muta, and we all know the connection those two men have. And they kind of gave each other a little, you know, it's the same motion as the Too Sweet, but I know it's not the Too Sweet. I know that's not what it is because Muta always used to do that with his hands, even if he wasn't. But maybe it was low key. Yeah, I forgot Muta was in the NWO. Yeah, I forgot about that NWO Japan.
We don't talk about NWO Japan.
Besides that, this was great. Like I said, to see them start out the ring and Sonata to hit the moonsault on them, and then for Muto to do his sequence and act like he was going to do the moonsault on Sonata,
thank
knowing he's retired.
Tanahashi. Thank goodness for
retired
Tanahashi.
That moonsault. Exactly. Tanahashi was like, no, you can't do that. After the match, Muto said his angry doctor and family popped into his head. So he's very thankful that Tanahashi stopped him. So that was a great moment. And Bushi paid respects to Muto at one point in the match, like I said, and Shota got a chance to shine. So I just thought when you have three different generations of aces on one team, you know, kind of like the current, the future, and then you have the past. So when you have that type of team up, it was just hard for me to see them losing in this spot, and they didn't. They did a great job, and it's something I always remember because, again, like I said, projecting forward, Shota will probably be the biggest star in New Japan going forward. We know what Tanahashi has going on and has been doing for a long time. And then the same thing goes with Muto, who is now at the end of his journey. So I just thought it was a beautiful thing to see.
All right, next up for the seventh match on the card, and the one that really infuriated me, the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship four-way match. We had Wato, Despy, Taiji Ishimori, and Hiromu, with Hiromu picking up the victory against MF and Wato with the time bomb number two. Now, Wato had this in the match several times. Like, he had this match in the bag, and then he messed up. He messed up. But I'll
let
it
was at one point where he hit his finisher, and he definitely just got up. He just let him up. Like, bro, why? But, you know, besides that, he hit his finisher at least two or three more times where it looked like he had it won. But I did love the fact, like I said, you could tell the way the match was put together. This was incredible. It was a great look for Master Wato. Everyone else in this match were more established, did whatever they could to elevate Wato in everyone's eyes. And I think if you watch this match, you notice that, you know, I think after a while, after watching, I think we all were kind of rooting for Master Wato because of how well he was doing. But again, in the end, Hiromu, after his 2-year absence from the top of the card, from the top of the junior division, he's back where he belongs. And, you know, you can blame Wato, but you also can blame, you can do like Wato and you can blame Taiji Ishimori, because at one point, Wato did have a win. Taiji Ishimori hit him in the back with a chair or something. So,
yeah,
I do get that. I do get why he blames Taiji, but. Yeah, man, this was a great match. I think everyone looked great here, even though I thought the focus was here to try to make sure everyone knows Wato is on our level. So Wato next year, who knows? And then by next year, he could either already be junior champion or definitely could be the one to take it away next year. So or by next year. I'm just giving Watto plenty of time to continue to develop. But he's way, by the way, didn't the Watto, when who was teaming up with Tenzon, when he was still figuring things out, leaps and bounds better. So
I don't know. Tenzon still be disappointed with how he did some of the things in that match. They had a talk. You know that I might be showing my age here, but you know that Tyra Banks meme from America's Next Top Model where she was screaming in that girl's face saying she rooted for her?
Yes, like, that was you. You were
that was me. I was rooting for Watto. I was out there, like, biting my nails for Watto, and he just kept on. I know he got hit in the back of the, in the back with a chair, but I'm just, we'll have to talk about this later. I'm getting frustrated again. The next match of the night, the IWGP US Heavyweight Championship double main event, Will Ospreay versus Kenny Omega, with Kenny Omega picking up the victory with a one-winged angel on Ospreay for the win.
Yeah, so again, this match was a war. And by now, I'm sure everyone have heard about it. Everyone have at least seen something about the Ospreay and Omega match. And I can't do it justice. I can't break it down spot for spot and explain why it was so beautiful. The attention to detail in this match was great. The storytelling, the physicality, you know, it was a lot of things that you'll never forget. Of course, here's Kenny when he's peeking his head through the broken table where he smashed Ospreay's head into it. It was just brutal. I mentioned earlier about Carl Anderson being a different animal in Japan. Kenny Omega, this was not AEW Kenny Omega. You know, he had the Sephiroth gear, the Sephiroth one wing, the angel music. He, you know, he just looked like a menace. He looked, you know, like he was ready for war. And, you know, and we all, you know, it kind of went viral, their promo towards each other at the beginning before this match. And I think Omega even mentioned after it, like, you know, a lot of what Ospreay said was true. But, you know, he's not giving up his spot. He's not giving up the title of best wrestler in the world. So if Ospreay has to suffer for Omega to continue to be on top, Omega will let Ospreay suffer. And I just love that story. Selfish. I love that again, like I said, this is a storyline that's been building for years. They've been subtly, you know, sending shots at each other for years. So to, you know, to see this match play out and to see Kenny win, which again, you guys know I predicted Ospreay to win. I did not think Kenny would win. But, you know, to see him win really made me happy because, you know, for a couple reasons. One, he got revenge for Kota Ibushi, which, again, if you paid attention, you know Ospreay did play a hand in taking Ibushi out, which kind of led to a lot of his health. Spiral. Yeah, a lot of the health issues down the line, even though you can't really blame it on Ospreay. But I get why, from a storytelling element, Omega is blaming Ospreay. And, you know, it had its crazy spots and stuff, but I do not think this was – both of these guys get accused of not being as good as they are. And just being gymnastics and all of that. This match was not that. This match was physical. This match was emotional.
It was brutal.
It was, yeah, it was great. You know, I was groaning at some of the stuff that they were putting each other to. The DDT on the top of the apron where he kind of bust Ospreay open in the first place. It was just so many great moments that I can't really ever explain just how much, how high I am on this match. As a matter of fact, this is definitely one of the greatest matches I've ever seen. Seriously. I don't say that lightly. So this is as close to perfection as you get. And like I said, he got revenge for Kota Ibushi, but he also got it in like dramatic fashion with that too, because before he gave him the one-winged angel, he hit him with the Kamigoye, one of my favorite finishers ever, the knee to the face, you know, Kota Ibushi style. So, and you know, right before that, Ospreay was kind of like, you know, he spit at him. He was like, you know, kind of, with a final FU going out in the fashion that you would expect someone like Ospreay to go out. You know, he's so proud. Of course he would go out like that in the last act of defiance. So, and then I love Kenny winning also because, you know what, it guarantees they're going to do it again. Whether it's in the USA, whether it's, you know, AEW, whether it's a New Japan show, whether it's in, you know, at Forbidden Door 2, if they decide to do it, who knows? The point is, we're going to get Ospreay and Omega again at some point, and they're probably going to do even better. Because I heard, apparently, from what I'm hearing now, since they are planning to do this again down the line, they actually held some things back. Wow. That's the thing. That's amazing to think about. That people are saying this is one of the greatest matches they've ever seen, and they held things back. So I can't wait to see what happens next.
Last match of the night, the other part of the double main event, the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship match. We've got Kazuchika Okada versus Jay Whitehall. And Okada picking up the victory with that Rainmaker. Stealing that title from Jay White's clutches. Wow, wasn't it something?
Yeah, and before that, he gave him a Blade Runner. So he stole his move.
He literally.
Before that, so. Literally. You know, they were stealing each other's moves because, Jay White, definitely attempted some Rainmakers. But, this was a great main event. Immediately online, people were comparing it to Omega and Will. And, I don't necessarily think it's fair, but I understand because that's just human nature. You're going to do that. Mm-hmm. You're going to compare, especially when this is the main event. But if you look at this match and you don't think it was great, I don't know what's wrong with you. It wasn't as physical or as – it was physical, but it wasn't as physical as Omega and Ospreay. It didn't have that crazy – probably the heat that Omega and Ospreay had going into their match. But this match definitely was more methodical, but both guys looked great. This was one of the best performances from Jay White when it comes to his matches with Okada. And I thought, Okada was just as good as always. And, I think the only minus that I mentioned this when I was predicting it. The only problem going in is that with this capping off New Japan's 50th year, with this being Inoki's memorial show, it was really, really hard for me to believe that Okada was going to lose this match. And as you saw, he did not. But he did have a great moment at the end there with Inoki-san, getting a chance to kind of give a final salute to Inoki-san. And also, he got challenged by Shingo Takagi, which I'll get a little bit more into when we run through New Year's Dash now.
Oh, yeah, because Shingo.
But overall, this was an incredible Wrestle Kingdom. I really, really enjoyed it. I think a lot. I do want to drop this off before we get into New Year's Dash completely. At least 40,000 new subscribers, I think. But I also saw 90,000 new users the night of Wrestle Kingdom. So those are incredible numbers for New Japan World. Incredible. And that's just New Japan World. Not taking into account the people who were watching in Japan or who were there. So I know that this probably made New Japan a lot of, money and a lot of – it did really well for them. And I think, again, as a fan, I enjoyed it. And I think all the new people, new faces, if you were wondering about should I check out New Japan – yes, you should. One and two, go back, watch Wrestle Kingdom 17, and you'll see why. And watch other shows of the past, and you'll understand why some of us out here really, really hold New Japan close to our heart. So yeah, let's get into New Year's Dash real fast, so we can kind of talk about what's going on going forward.
New Year's Dash, we got the first matches: Ren Narita, Tiger Mask, and Honma versus Dick Togo, Yujiro, and Evil. Evil picking up the victory against Homa with the Magic Killer.
Ooh. Yeah. So Homa, at the end of that match, after Evil and won, that's when they decided to jump on Ren Narita. And like you mentioned earlier, Minoru Suzuki and El Desperado came to his aid. And, they kind of, after the match, gave him an offer we don't have to cooperate. We don't have to get along as friends or anything. You just have to, let's just work together and take on Evil for, and those guys for the tag belts. I have no problem with it, but I also love something Suzuki said. He kind of looked at Ren Narita, who still seemed to be unsure whether or not he should team with them, and he was like, son of strong style, huh? And he was like basically thinking about it, and he was like, I know more about strong style than anybody. And he said, just you watch. And he kind of left it like that, and it was like, I liked it. So we'll see exactly what results of that. Will that be a new Ren-led faction possibly, or even a different Suzuki-ran faction? I don't know. We'll see. But I do love them three working together going forward. That's what New Year's Dash is all about, starting off these next year's story. So I love this as a, place to go for Ren.
I agree.
Right off the back of Wrestle Kingdom.
I agree. Second match of the night, we've got Will Ospreay and Catch Nene versus four guys, Doki, Kanemaru, and Tai Chi with Taka as the manager in his nice suit.
Or if you ask Ospreay, the four guys no one cared about in Suzuki-gun. Will Ospreay was very, very angry, as you would imagine, after losing probably the biggest match in his life. But also the people were very, very pleasantly surprised, but happy to see him. Because, again, he fought so well, fought so hard in that match. And, again, the fact that he was wrestling so soon after that match was surprising, especially with the way he looked. You know, he still looked banged up, as you know, of course he would. But, yes, you know, again, this match was what it was, but it led to, it seemed like a tease that we're going to get Ospreay and Tai Chi because, you know, Ospreay is just really, really mad that Tai Chi had the nerve to even step to him after what happened, basically. He was insulted that Tai Chi had the nerve to you know, talk to him as if he had a chance to beat him, too. Like, again, it didn't take much to set Ospreay off. He was in that mood. But
Tai Chi said he was coming for the leader of a faction.
Yes, Tai Chi is coming because he's now the leader of his own, which, again, just
four guys. That's debatable.
It is debatable because, you know, Kanemaru did not want to be led by him. So it's funny how that group is. I can't wait to see what just four guys continue to do. But, yeah, it looked like going, you know, starting it out, we're going to get Tai Chi versus Will Ospreay, and we're also going to get Doki and Kanemaru versus Catch 22.
Yes, third match of the night. We're going to go with Yoshihashi, Ishii, and Goto. Ew. Called him Tomo. Tomo-san? To-san? Ew. Anyway, Bishamon and Tomohiro Ishii.
I think it was Tom-chan.
Tom-chan?
Tom-chan.
Ugh.
Tomo-chan.
Versus TMDK with Zack Sabre Jr. Am I saying that right? TMDK or TDK?
Yeah, the Mighty Don't Kneel. Yeah, I think that's what it is. TMDK.
So, yes. It stands for something?
Yes. The Mighty Don't Kneel.
Oh, I didn't need to know that.
Yes, TMDK. So,
I didn't say who won. With TMDK picking up the victory, pinning Yoshihashi, Mikey Nichols, pinning Yoshihashi with a tank buster.
Yeah, it was exactly. I think him and Shane hit their tag finish on them, on Yoshihashi, and got the pin over the tag team champs. Ooh. So, you know, now we're going to have a fresh set of contenders with TMDK possibly challenging Bishamon. And, you know, like I said, Zack Sabre Jr. and Tomohiro Ishii will be fighting for the television belt at some point. Ishii said it'll be funny when a guy who lost in the first round of the TV title tournament beats you, Zach. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
And you know that's going to be a good match. They have great matches together because Zach can't really stretch Ishii out. He's a little, you know, he's a stubby.
It's harder to get to some of his limbs because he's so right compact.
Oh, that's going to be interesting.
So, yeah, it's going to be a fun one. It's going to be a fun one.
Next match, it was Yo Taguchi, Shota, and Makabe versus Bushi, Hiromu, Sanada, and Naito, with Yo picking up the victory against Hiromu with the direct dive.
And speaking up for himself.
Oh, yeah, he said what he wanted.
And blatantly calling out Hiromu. He even Hiromu was impressed and was like, okay, Yo, you seem to be following your own path now. It's like, you know. So, you know, I think Hiromu was intrigued by that matchup. And I think I don't have a problem with that. Like I said, coming off of Junior Tag League, Yo seem to be more confident. So we'll see what happens. Will Yo take out Hiromu as his reign begins? It'd be interesting to find out.
I think it's time for Yo to get some singles gold. He's already proven he's a tag team, you know, aficionado, tag team specialist. Now it's time for him to work on himself, you know.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Next match, we've got Wato, Hikuleo, Tamatanga, and Tanahashi versus Taiji Ishimori, El Phantasmo, Kenta, and Jay White, with Tamatanga picking up the victory against El Phantasmo with a DQ.
Yeah, ELP hit him with his belt, basically.
Oh, so he couldn't not cheat. He could not cheat.
Yeah, and that's kind of cool that you mentioned it, because it leads me right into what Thomas said after this match. And basically telling ELP to grow some nuts and fight him like a man and stop all the old Bullet Club tactics that, you know, he obviously haven't perfected. So Tama basically is calling out ELP, and we'll see how that turned out. I think that'll be a great match. Great little, great first contender, I think, for Thomas open weight title. And also, the big thing coming out of this was Jay White. Man, he went berserk after this match and just laid into Hikuleo. Blames Hikuleo. Basically, I didn't mention this after Wrestle Kingdom, but he immediately blamed Hikuleo for why everything, because everything else went perfectly according to plan, according to Jay White, except when Hikuleo embraced with his brother and turned on him.
Bruh, and, that's my brother.
Exactly. You can look at it like that, but when Jay loses, he turns psycho, so he does not rationalize it that way. Hikuleo ruined his life, so now he's going to try to ruin Hikuleo's life, ruin Hikuleo's New Japan debut, or, you know, or run in Japan, make sure he doesn't ever win a title, ruin the fact, try to make sure that Hikuleo never competes at a Wrestle Kingdom. So, and even brought up, you know, Haku's past in Japan and, you know, speaking, growing up in Japan for a while and speaking Japanese. So it was really, really personal. But yeah, Jay White blamed everything on Hikuleo. So now we have a loser leaves Japan match. And Hikuleo agreed to it. So at some point, I'm not sure when it's going to happen. Maybe at New Beginning, we may see Jay White or Hikuleo for the last time in Japan, New Japan. So people are speculating. People are definitely trying to say contracts. Maybe we may see Jay White in the Rumble and all that. But depends on when this happens, because if it happens in New Beginning, I think he's going to miss the Rumble anyway. New Beginning is like February 4th. So he won't be able to be at the Rumble if he's going to be at New Beginning. So we'll see when they decide to book this, if they or how they're going to do it. But yes, loser leaves Japan. Hikuleo just really got in Japan. So it's really hard for me to believe that he could be gone already, but we will see what happens. We'll see how that turn out.
Jay White needs a therapist.
Yes. Every time he loses, he does not process
it. This is not a good coping mechanism. He needs to talk to somebody.
He does not process losses well.
Next match of the night, almost the last match, we've got the KOPW four-way match. We've got Yano, Great Okan, Sho, and Shingo Takagi. Shingo Takagi picking up the victory with the Last of the Dragons on Yano.
And he stole it from Okan. Okan just hit the, I think it's called Terminator or something. He just hit his chokeslam, his finish, or like, I guess he wasn't even chokeslam because he grabbed you by the face. But he finished, he literally just hit his finisher on Yano. And I think it's the Eliminator. That's what they call it. Yeah, the Eliminator. He literally just finished Yano, and then here comes Shingo knocking, hitting him with a nice jab, and then hitting Last of the Dragon out of nowhere.
It was closed fist, too. He was dazed.
So, yeah, so it was a great way to close it out. So, of course, you get after that, Okan being, you know, a little
perturbed,
a little mad at that, and arguing with him about Japanese rights and the what, you know, historically what's supposed to happen in battle, and Shingo being offended, like, aren't you Mongolian? Like, why you get to tell me what Japanese,
and
you know,
wrestlers
are supposed
British
to do?
Title?
Yeah, and by the way, Okan was saying, you know, he's not, you're not, you only care about the KOPW now because it's a belt, you know, you didn't care about it, and you know, you're not, you don't have the honor of a real champion. But he immediately drops his British belt on the ground to prove basically that he doesn't have any honor either, but it doesn't matter. Like I said, I will never question the Great Okan. All hell. And, all hell. That's what we do, the Great Okan. All hell. What?
We don't do that.
That's what we do.
He's a zombie.
Bow. All hell. Anyway, like I was saying, Shingo, after winning it, was like, nope, I'm going to go see Okada. You're going to have to wait, Okan. We'll do it at some point, but you're going to have to wait because I'm going to challenge Okada. And Okan was like, well, hold up. You really don't care about the KOPW. You know, why don't you just give me the KOPW and you go challenge Okada as yourself? But anyway, I just had to kind of talk about that back and forth because I love both of these guys. But, yeah, it was a great, great four-way. Great four-way leading us into what happened later on.
Later on, the last match of the night, we had Kenny Omega tagging with Okada.
By the way, it was a surprise to everyone. The fans were shocked. Everyone.
Okada
was shocked.
Omega was shocked too. Like, oh.
Okada is his partner, right? So. Go ahead. Who they fight?
Versus Aaron Hanare and Jeff Card. Jeff Cobb.
Oh, my goodness. How many edits you want me to have to make?
It's all right. It's just Jeff.
Anyway, Jeff. No, it's not all right. It's just Jeff. Anyway, Jeff Cobb is your next contender the way it's looking for the U.S. title. Like, he's going to pick up for Will and try to, you know, get some of that revenge back.
With Okada picking up the victory against Hanare with a Rainmaker.
Yes, and before that, him and Kenny Omega did a Rain Trigger, which is awesome to see. Something we never thought we'd see. Like I said, two of the greatest rivals in New Japan of the last few years teaming up. And like I said, we're setting up Kenny Omega versus Jeff Cobb down the line. So I love that. You know, that's going to be awesome wherever they do it. It seems like they could be in AEW. They could do it in Japan. They probably will do it both. Who cares? Either way it goes, it's going to be great. And I love that going forward for the U.S. title. And again, I love them giving us that moment of seeing Okada and Omega on the same teams. Like, again, you know, you remember what it was like when they were feuding. Yes. You never thought that would happen. So this was awesome. And again, this is just, I wanted to do this podcast. I wanted to give New Japan all the flowers for the great wrestling content that they provided me over the first week of January. And yeah, man, I'm glad we got a chance to do that. Is there anything else we have to get off before we can end this show?
Well, I just want to say quickly, thanks for all the support. Listen to us on your way to work. Listen to us on your lunch break. Listen to us when you're eating dinner. Watch us on YouTube. We're great if you're cleaning the house. Just go ahead and give us a listen. It's not that long of a podcast, and we are great. His voice sounds amazing. You can go to sleep to it if you want to. It is fabulous. But, again, thanks to all the support. We've been at this for a couple of years now, and it feels really good to keep doing this.
Yeah, onwards and upward. We'll be back. I'm not sure exactly what the next show will be about quite yet. But we definitely have some topics in the tuck, so we'll figure things out. And I will let you guys hear me when you hear me. I always say see you when I see you, but I don't see none of y'all for the most part. But if you ever see me, I'll see you. Oh, yeah, Royal Rumble at the end of the month. We will be there. It's going to be hype as hell. So I'm not sure what type of content I'm going to do, if I'm going to make a vlog out of it, I'm just going to get some clips, put them on YouTube. Either way it go, you guys will see it when it's ready. But I cannot wait for that. I know you can't wait for that, so we will talk to you guys at another time. Thank you guys for listening to the show. Adios. Au revoir.
Annyeong.